When farming alone for a distant market, farmers tend to be price takers. But when cooperating with other farmers, they can gain enough clout to become price makers. So we ask, how do farmers cooperate to become price makers instead of price takers?
Welcome to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with your host, Michael Olson. And now get ready for 1 hour of What's Eating What Radio.
Hello out there. You are tuned into the 1419th edition of the Food Chain Radio podcast. Or hey, perhaps you're among our friends way down there in Christchurch who are tuned in as we stream along on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com. Well, whoever you are and wherever you are, welcome aboard. I am Michael Olson, your host for this hour of What's Eating What. Folks, my first Metro Farm speaking engagement was a three-day seminar for family-sized dairy farmers up there in Drummondville, Quebec. The farmers were facing a fundamental change to their dairy industry, which was then being funded via government subsidies, but that would soon be forced to compete in the open market of the North American Free Trade Agreement against the industrial giants in the U.S. The organizer of the event, which took place in the snow white of the winter up there, wanted me to help the farmers find a way to survive this fundamental change in how their business was being conducted. After listening to their fears of having to compete without support from government subsidies, I suggested they consider establishing a marketing cooperative to differentiate their Quebec milk from the commodity milk of the industrial giants. I said, what you have is not a commodity, it is something that is truly special. But you have to sell the world on how special it is. If you don't, all milk is white, and whoever can produce the most white milk for the least cost will likely win the consumer dollars. That is, free trade. Shortly thereafter, I met some folks at a farm conference out in California who were doing what I advised up in Quebec, which was to cooperate with other farmers to gain some clout. They called themselves the Organic Valley Farm Cooperative. And they had something truly special to sell. Recently, I ran across Organic Valley folks at the Natural Products West and learned their co-op now has over 1,800 family dairy farmers with sales over $1 billion per year. So today it's time to ask, how do farmers cooperate to become price makers instead of price takers? And who better to ask than Sabrina Servais, who is a farmer at Hamburg Farm in Stoddard, Wisconsin. Hello, Sabrina.
Hi.
Welcome to the Food Chain.
It's great to be here.
Okay, also with us today, we have Elizabeth McMullen, who is the PR Program Manager for Organic Valley Farm Cooperative in Lafarge, Wisconsin. Elizabeth, hello.
Hello, how are you?
I'm just right, thank you. Well, I look forward to this. Sabrina, let's start with you. Hamburg Hills Farm. You know, you folks in Wisconsin have just come out of winter here not too long ago. Describe what you see when you first turn the cows out into the spring pasture.
Yeah, so this is being filmed in June, so we're in the throes of pasture season already. And those first days we let them out, it's just the greenest grass of the year. The cows are running outside. They're so excited to be out. They're running outside. They're bucking. They're kicking. Their back legs are up in the air. They're throwing their head and they're tossing it in the wind. You got the blue sky that we've been waiting all year for, and the sun's shining, and it's just beautiful and gorgeous out. And it's truly the best time of the year.
Do you actually see the cows grin?
You know, they can't really smile, but you can just feel the smiling energy coming off of them. Like, they are so excited to be outside. It's just the way they, like, throw their head and the way they stand and they gallop. I don't know if cows technically gallop, but they're galloping through the pastures. Gallivanting might be a better word.
Yeah.
But they're just ready to be back outside. And
happiness is. I guess it's spring for everybody, right?
Yes.
The same way. Good. Hamburg Hills Farm. Tell us a little bit about your farm.
Yeah, so I'm third generation on my family's farm. My grandpa bought it back in the 1970s. If you know anything about the Driftless region of Wisconsin where I'm located, there's a lot of German settlers, a lot of ridges, and a lot of valleys. And so there's a joke that the Catholics live on the ridges. So my grandpa grew up on a different ridge, and then he relocated to the ridge we are currently on, which is Hamburg Ridge. Which is where the farm got its name from. But anyways, he bought the farm in the 70s. My dad
Wait a
decided.
minute, wait a minute. The Catholics live on the ridge.
The
Where do the
joke is
rest of the people live?
Catholics live on the ridges and the Lutherans live in the valleys.
Okay. My family would have lived in the valleys then.
But we all live here together at the end.
Good. All right, good.
Anyways, my grandpa bought the farm back in the 70s. He lived there with, or he brought with him my grandma and my dad, and he had three siblings. My dad is the oldest, and in the 90s, he really decided he wanted to stay on the family farm. So in 94, he also got married, and me and my brother were also born at the end of the 90s. So then in 2002, my dad officially bought out his dad and took over the farm. And at the time, it was my parents, and there were three young children. It was me. I have an older brother and a younger brother. And then in 2007, we joined the Organic Valley Cooperative, Crop Cooperative, which is for us local. Although the cooperative is nationwide, it is
International.
local for us. Yes, it was founded in our hometown area. Some of the original founders live on the next ridge top, if you will.
Catholics.
Catholics. yeah, but me and my brothers went away to school. I went to UW-Madison, and after 4 years of university, me and my older brother and eventually my little brother all decided to come home and work on the family farm.
Good.
So my dad is still the primary owner and operator, but me and my brothers are also now stakeholders within the farm.
But how did your father manage the farm before joining the co-op?
So before we joined the cooperative, we were a conventional dairy farm. There's about, if you do the math, there's 5 years where my dad had just purchased the farm and when we joined the cooperative. And it was very hard. We were smaller at the time, but we were still a decent sized farm for our area. He had three young kids at home. He was working all of the time. We
Dairy
rewatched.
farmer, right?
Yeah, we were rewatching VHS tapes from like Easter and Christmas when we were children. And me and my brothers are running around looking for our Easter baskets. And my dad is just exhausted at the table, eating his breakfast, watching us run around because, you know, he'd just gone outside and worked for 3 hours. He came in for a bowl of cereal and he's going to go out and work another five before he can
Oh.
come for lunch. And then I mean, that was a holiday for him too, is he was still out working and making sure everything was getting done. And it was a struggle for him to put in so much effort and hope that he would get something in return for doing what he loved.
Wow. Well, having been around dairy farms, I know that when there's work to be done, you have to do the work. And that's as simple as that. Yeah. So, how did he sell his products before joining the co-op?
So previously, we were with Foremost Farms, which is another. Sorry, I'm going to ask Liz, is that a brand or is it? It's not a cooperative. Yeah, we were not with a cooperative at the time. We were with Foremost Farms, who's a producer. So they buy our milk from us
Okay.
and sell it out to other brands.
Okay.
Typically in Wisconsin, they're a Wisconsin-based company, I believe. But that's just, they'd kind of shopped around for. I think my grandpa was in a couple of co-ops in like the 80s and the 90s. We'd shipped with another brand called Golden Guernsey, even though we don't have Guernsey cows.
Milk
And
is
then,
white.
yep. But then leading up to when we eventually switched to organic, and while my dad was running the farm, we were with Foremost Farms.
So this is a big transition for you. Not only did you look to start in a new co-op, you were starting in a new way of being a farmer.
Yeah.
And that must have been, were you part of that transition too?
So I was 7 years old when we went through the transition. So at this point, I was feeding calves milk replacer every morning and at night. And I was helping dad pour the then colorful corn into the corn planter and, things here and there. And
Sure. Yeah.
when we
Things that
switched,
all farm kids do.
yeah. And when we went to the transition, suddenly we weren't feeding milk replacement to our calves. Milk replacer is basically like the milk powder that, what's it called? Give to, I mean, a lot of people use it in humans too, but we use it for the calves
Like
as
the
well.
colostrum.
Yep. Well, colostrum's a little different, but yeah, we're giving them store-bought bags of
Okay.
milk. But when we switched to organic, we had to start using the milk from our cows to feed our calves. So we'd always have to save a couple gallons for every morning feeding and every evening feeding, specifically for our babies. Additionally, I just learned to ride my bike, and we were letting cows out to pasture. So me and my brothers would be biking up and down the hills every day after school, bringing cows in from pasture. And it was just kind of, it was such a big change, but because we were children growing up, it was just kind of that was what our childhood
Sure.
became, was this transition to organic. It was just the way as we were growing and changing and becoming who we are, so was our farm.
Okay. And that you made the change with a lot of sweat and tears and everything. You made the change.
My mom tells the story. She cashed her My mom didn't work on the farm full time, but she cashed her pension to help us get through that transition so that we would have enough money to make the full change, because there's 3 years where you're putting in organic input, but you're not getting organic output, if you will. And that's just the transition period. And it's very difficult for people to get through. So that was one of the ways my mom tried to lessen, if you will, lessen the blow of the financial shift from being a conventional farm to an organic farm.
And that's often what farmers must do these days. There's often a off-farm job that helps the farmers survive, and that's what happens quite frequently. Good.
I will say
And
my mom has recently retired, though. She is a part-time grandma now
oh,
and
good.
part-time farmhand, if you will. She does a lot of the bookkeeping for us, and she's very, very good at it. She runs a very tight ship.
Very important to run a tight ship too, because expenses can quickly get out of hand and you find yourself in big trouble.
Oh, yes.
Well, good. Okay. So today, ladies and gentlemen, we're taking a look at how farmers cooperate to gain a little clout in the market. If you're a sole farmer farming for a distant market and you actually become a price taker. You have to take what the market says it will pay you. But if you can cooperate and gain some economies of scale, you can actually develop some strength. And with that strength, you can go into the market and say, this is what I want you to pay me. And if you can do that, this your chances of survival are much greater. And so today we're talking about the strength that farmers can gain by joining a cooperative with the Organic Valley Cooperative. And we will be right back after these messages with our crew and going to have a good time. Stay tuned.
Let's go back for more of What's Eating What on the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
We are back, and we're way out in the middle of Wisconsin, talking with Sabrina Servais. And also in the background, we have Elizabeth McMullen. And we're talking about the Organic Valley Farm Cooperative, which I first met quite some time ago at a little farm conference in California. And the people I met with were really excited because they were putting together a cooperative of organic farmers, which just then was becoming quite the scene. And today, what, 1,800 farmers working together to gain some clout for themselves in the marketplace. And you've done a great job of that. And you participate in the co-op activities as well, Sabrina?
Yes, I try to be very involved in every opportunity the cooperative offers to me.
Okay. You were an intern with the cooperative, Elizabeth says. How did you become an intern with the cooperative?
So when I went to school, I went to UW-Madison. I studied dairy science and life sciences communications with a certificate in ag business management. And as part of going through college, you need internship credits. So when I finally sat down to start applying to internships, it was like October of 2020. I said Organic Valley, all or nothing. My family had been with the co-op for some time. I know it's right in the backyard of my home.
So it's your team.
Yeah. Yeah. I kind of knew what kind of business I would be getting involved with, but I also knew that the Organic Valley brand, the company part of the cooperative, was at a caliber that I was interested in working for. So I applied for a couple different internship positions, and I eventually got selected for communications intern, which shifted to public relations intern. So I was working with Liz every single day, and it was great. It was a treat.
Elizabeth, can you jump in for just a minute?
Absolutely.
Good. So Organic Valley is located in Lafarge, Wisconsin, which is pretty much in the middle of nowhere.
Yes.
What is the population of Lafarge?
Lafarge's population is a little bit over 700 people, like 747-ish.
Okay.
Which is less than the employees we have here, actually.
Okay, good. So you pretty much dominate the town of Lafarge, Wisconsin. Why not move a big co-op to a big city? You're halfway between the Twin Cities and Milwaukee. Why not pick a big city?
Well, when we started as a co-op in 1988, the seven farmers that started the co-op were from this area. So one of our founding farmers, George Seaman. George lived in Lafarge. He was very close to Lafarge, the town. And so they thought it would just be a good place to start the co-op. And they had a meeting at the Viroqua courthouse, and there was standing room only. So they were like, okay, this people are excited. So it made sense. People were excited. We are the, dairy state, and it just made sense in 1988. And then we've just stayed here because it's beautiful. The Driftless is really gorgeous, especially this time of year. And it's just it's a central point for a lot of our farmers too. So
is there something about the rural ethic also that it helps a co-op get along in the world?
Oh, absolutely. And then also Viroqua is super close to Lafarge. And if you've ever been to Viroqua, Wisconsin, it's just a bunch of hippies that just want to make the world better. I used to live in Viroqua, so I can say that. And it was just, it just was a lifestyle that everybody was already living. So it made sense.
Let's turn to the co-op now. What exactly is a co-op? Let's start with Sabrina. Sabrina, in your eyes, what exactly is a co-op?
So a co-op, coming from my farmer perspective.
Perfect. From your background, absolutely.
Yeah, and in the connotation in which, or the context of which I oftentimes use it, it's when a group of people come together with a common goal to support themselves. There are tons of co-ops out here that aren't food based in the way that Organic Valley is. They're farmer co-ops. We buy all of our propane and fuel from a local cooperative. All of our grain and feed that we bring in that we can't produce ourselves is from a different cooperative. There's just so many that we're involved in as farmers that aren't just who we ship our milk to. And they really support these small rural regions across the United States where agriculture is booming. They are huge cornerstones to the community because the communities are all a part of these cooperatives. And in turn, these cooperatives support the greater community. You go to the local dairy breakfast, you go to the local Lions Club. We have our Friends of Chaseburg is my local small town. All of these events are put on and supported by the local cooperatives, whether they be the feed co-op or the local gas station cooperative. They all support each other, including Organic Valley. They're usually one of the biggest donors for our local dairy breakfast, whether it's an Organic Valley farm or not. They just understand how important cooperatives, agriculture, and dairy farms are for our communities and understand that supporting them, no matter who they are, is really, really important for sharing their story, the story of the local farmers, and just keeping the community alive.
It's interesting that farmers are notoriously independent people and yet are dependent upon each other to get by in the world. I worked on a ranch once, real quick story. We were harvesting wheat. It's been a real hot period. Happened to see a fire, a range fire, off to the west. We went and fought it, came back, had lunch. Started harvesting wheat again, saw a fire off to the north, went to fight that, came back. There was a bunch of cars parked on the highway in front of our place. Lo and behold, our combine burned down in the field while we were fighting everybody's fire. Next day, we had about 10 combines show up and harvest the wheat. And that's, it seems to me, the essence of rural cooperation. You're an independent farmer, but you're really dependent on everybody else. Working with each other gives you economic clout, does it not?
Yeah, totally. I agree. We are the sum of all of our parts, right? And it's a greater sum when there's more parts.
There you go, just like that. Let's turn to Elizabeth. Ask a quick question to Elizabeth.
Yeah.
Is there a formal agreement that establishes a co-op, and do farmers enter into this agreement by signing a contract?
Yes, and there are co-op bylines as well. So one of the bylines that they have is they have to meet yearly to talk about the issues and talk about the year before and also nominate for the board, which is made of seven farmers, eight farmers. And they also obviously when they join the co-op, they sign a contract. Everything is very
So legally binding.
Yes, it's definitely still, yeah, a
We
business.
agree to work together, and if we don't, then you can throw me in jail.
Not that terrible, but definitely a legally binding contract. But there's also co-op bylines that they have to follow as well.
Good. And the co-ops, as Sabrina was saying, there's a number of different co-ops. What exactly does the Organic Valley Cooperative provide? What benefits does it provide for the farmer members?
I'm going to let Sabrina answer this because
Okay.
she can definitely, there's a plenty, definitely.
Yeah, so we're considered member owners within the co-op because as member owners, we own part of the co-op. In order to get the profits of the co-op, you have to own it. Additionally, so Organic Valley is the brand that is owned by Crop Cooperative. So Crop is Cooley Region Organic Producing Pools. So we're not just dairy. We also have a produce pool that produces vegetables. We have an egg pool that does our poultry products.
So a number of different pools
Yes,
of
dairy is
crops.
our biggest. By far, dairy is the biggest pool because we are Wisconsin based. But it is the biggest pool, and that's why most people associate us with dairy. But anyways, we are member owners. There are a ton of different types of member owners within the cooperative and within those different pools. We are also considered a marketing cooperative. So all of the employees that work within the co-op are hired for the purpose of shipping and selling our agricultural products, our food products under the Organic Valley label. So people like Liz, her job is public relations, making sure people know who we are, having someone to talk to when they have questions about our organization. We have people who work in operations, shipping milk across the country. Milk routes are incredibly complicated. It is a high stakes process. They have everything down to the minute, to the hour of where our milk, our eggs, our products need to be at a specific time. That is their job. We have people who do packaging, and their whole job is to figure out what our packaging is going to look like. So there's so many people that we also support as member owners within the co-op. But you also asked about the benefits. So the benefits is we get a stable pay price of milk. All those people we hire in to help with the marketing of things, their job is to ensure that we are selling enough product to maintain a stable pay price for all farmers, no matter what they produce for the co-op. That is Organic Valley's number one mission.
A
Their second,
stable price.
a stable pay price. Their second
Now,
mission.
could you have that? Is it possible to get a stable price without having some kind of market clout? Without having, with if you're just a single farmer and you're just selling, taking your product to the city, is it possible to have that kind of clout, to have a stable price? I don't think so.
I would say it would be very, very, it is possible, I would think, but it'd be very, very difficult. We have power in numbers. We have power in our size, if you will, because as you have mentioned before, there's over 1,000 different farmers in this cooperative who all have a voice and who all work to support the brand, market. I'm not the only farmer that does podcasts and radio talks. We have farmers all across the country who go out into their communities, into big cities sometimes, and tells the story of Organic Valley. So it's a team effort, and you can cover more ground when you have a team.
And you have a steady supply of product too, because if one farmer has trouble, there are other farmers that can fill in. And so from the market's perspective, it's a good deal because you have enough volume and enough stability to keep things going, and the market can therefore rely on you, which gives you clout.
I suppose you're right.
Gives you clout. Good. So, yeah. Well, what about the problems with being in a co-op? There must be some problems.
We're from all different parts of the country, all different walks of life. We have a decent sized plain community. We have people from the northeast and the northwest are very, very different areas to farm in, for geography reasons, to
Sure.
social reasons, to just the way the land moves. And one of my favorite lines our past CEO, Jeff Frank, used to say is it's about alignment, not agreement. When we come together and we come from all different places with all different thoughts and all different farms, all of our farms are so different. There's no two farms that are the same. And that's a huge, huge thing about farmers is they're so proud of their farm and what makes it unique that sometimes it takes them a second to recognize the other ideas and needs from different farms. But when we all come together at the annual meeting that Liz was previously talking about, our goals there are always alignment. What is best for the co-op moving forward? If we sink, we all sink together. But if we fly, boy, do we all fly together. And that's the only way we have to look at it is coming together, finding what is best for us, moving to move forward and following that path to the best of our ability.
Sounds like democracy at
Yes.
its best, when it
Yes.
gets right down to it. Because if there's one thing city people don't really understand about farms, is that every farm is different. Every farm just is an invention of whoever's doing the farming and how they take all of the inputs and outputs and everything and juggle them and the environment and all of the things that they have to do and make their farm. So they're all different, every single one of them. And yet you all have the same basic objective, which is to survive and keep going. And so that is the nature of the co-op. Well, we're going to be taking a quick break. When we come back, we're going to talk about how best to participate in a co-op and what it takes to do that. Perhaps pick up the other forms of co-ops as well. This is the Food Chain Radio program. Michael Olson with Sabrina Servais, who is a farmer with Hamburg Hills Farm on the crest, right? On the ridge.
On the ridge top.
On the ridge tops, okay. And also we have Elizabeth McMullen, who's the PR program manager for Organic Valley Farms, and we have you. So do stay tuned. We will be right back after these messages to talk about how farmers can gain some clout in a real tough marketplace. Stay tuned.
Get this. You can earn a 5, 6, or 7-figure income by farming a small parcel of land in or near the city. You can be old or young, rich or poor, married or single. You can rent, lease, or own. You can farm small fruits on prairie bench lands, houseplants in coastal valleys, flowers on steep wooded hillsides, vegetables in city green belts, ornamentals in neighborhoods of million-dollar homes. There's only one catch. You must compete with other farmers for the consumer dollars. You can compete with others and win the consumer dollars with the help of MetroFarm, the guide to growing for profit in or near the city. MetroFarm is the Ben Franklin Book of the Year Award winner that will guide you step by step through the planning and development of your very own income-generating metropolitan farm. Abraham Lincoln said the greatest fine art of the future will be the making of a comfortable living on a small parcel of land. Get in on the future today. Get a copy of MetroFarm at www.metrofarm.com.
Low-cost airlines.
With one call to low-cost airlines, you'll drastically slash your travel costs. We're talking insanely low airline prices to any of your favorite destinations. The only way to get them is to call to instantly hear the most amazing best deals on airline travel. It's that easy. So call now and start packing.
800-704-1662. 800-704-1662. That's 800-704-1662.
For ag and industrial real estate, call Chuck Allen. Chuck Allen is a lifelong resident of the Pajaro Valley, a friend of everybody, and has closed so many real estate transactions, the Wall Street Journal and Keller Williams both list him as one of the nation's top producers. So for ag and industrial real estate, call the top realtor, Chuck Allen, at ChuckAllenProperties.com. ChuckAllenProperties.com.
History buffs. This tale from Michael Olson's Tales from a Tin Can took place while the USS Dale steamed through the South China Sea, January 1945.
In the South China Sea, we had weeks of weather that was either bad, worse, or worst. Sometimes it was so bad all you could do was tie yourself to a chair or in your rack and hold on. There was no way you could stand on deck. I remember looking out over the waves and seeing one of our sister tin cans do something that scared me out of my socks. That destroyer went completely airborne, like a fish jumping out of the water. I clearly remember seeing both its propellers spinning in the air. The sonar dome, which extends down from the bottom of the ship, completely cleared the surface of the water. I thought, if this is going on, we don't stand a chance.
Tales from a Tin Can contains 424 tales by 44 sailors aboard the USS Dale, from Pearl Harbor to Tokyo Bay. Order your Father's Day copy at talesfromatincan.com. That's talesfromatincan.com. Tales from a Tin Can.com.
So much to say, so little time to say it. On the Food Chain with Michael Olson.
Got milk? Well, I'll bet I know who has milk, and I bet that's the Organic Valley Farm Cooperative. They got milk, and they have a lot of milk, because they have 1,800 farmer members who cooperate to produce milk and dairy products for the Organic Valley label that you can find throughout the United States. It was a regional, started off in Wisconsin, and now you're all over the world. Is that not true, Elizabeth?
Correct.
Why did you grow so quickly to become a international co-op? What was the secret?
That's a really good question. I think the secret is everybody wants to feel bigger than like their purpose. And so I think that the farmers that joined the cooperative were really excited about something that really sustained them as farmers, and they could do what they love. And that really says a lot to what our founding farmers talked about and went to like talk to farmers around the entire United States and then beyond to see if they wanted to join the cooperative. Because when this cooperative started in 1988, it definitely was a concept that, I mean, not very many people had heard of yet, you know, and
which was or an organic.
Correct. Organic.
That was a major transition in the way we were doing things, from the conventional ways to the organic ways. Yep. Like Sabrina said, instead of feeding the calves powdered milk, they had to feed the cows real milk, which is a quite a step.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So yeah. We're changing the way we produce our dairy products, and hopefully in that change, making our dairy products much more nutritious in many different ways. So being among the first of the organic producers and bringing organic producers together probably helped a lot in a number of different ways. Elizabeth?
Yeah, absolutely. And it was the group of farmers that, you know, a lot of the farms that they reached out to and went and knocked on their door were already doing things like this. And so it just made sense. And so I think the farmers that the seven farmers that started the cooperative were visionaries, you know, that they knew what they were doing and the power of a cooperative. They had no idea what it would become, you know, almost 40 years later.
Wow. Milk is in some circles becoming quite a competitive concept. Because originally there was dairy milk, milk from mammals, but now there's milk from a lot of different things. As a co-op, you got to be concerned about the future of your industry. And now you have all of these new competitors coming in. And so if you go to a Starbucks and ask for a latte, of course, what kind of milk do you want? Well, of course, I want dairy milk, but most people maybe don't. Maybe they want soy milk or whatever the alternative is, and there's a lot of them. How does the co-op look at this new competitive landscape? So I'll take either one of you to start and just go to the next one later. Who wants to...
Milk is having a moment, and I think that it's quite cool to see that people are really leaning into learning where their food comes from, and they really want full fat dairy now. So I remember back in my day, I also grew up on a dairy farm, and you know we also sold to a a processor. We weren't organic. And, everybody was talking about skim back then. And then it was quite the change now, even now in 2026, that everybody is really thinking about full fat and what that means and what they want in their diet, which is pretty cool, honestly.
Well, yeah, even raw milk is becoming something that a lot of people are interested in as well. So there is a competition then between whole milk and the rest of the world of milk, which now consists of oat milk and hemp milk and all kinds of different milks. Is the co-op going to stand up, find a way to stand up and fight for the whole milk world? Sabrina?
So, yeah, I'm going to take this one. So, as I mentioned before, there are so many different pools that make up Organic Valley. And one of those pools is our producer pool. And they produce oats and they produce hay and they produce corn. And then the co-op, that came out weird, the co-op will help supply farms in need with these products. One thing is our organic farmers are very, very good at producing oats. And we saw some opportunity with that. So yes, we have this great dairy line. We have these great milks. We have our protein milk. We have incredible chocolate milk if you haven't had the chance to try it. But we also have oat creamers now. And they came out about a year or two ago. And when we look at this, we didn't look at it as taking away from our dairy farmers. We looked at it as an opportunity for our oat farmers. I have a good friend down in Iowa. His name's McCain. He has two robotic milkers, but his true love, aside from his cows, is being out in the fields late at night, growing oats and soybean and corn. And he sent me a picture of all of the oats that he had spent his whole summer, all of his effort and his joy into producing oats that were going to go to the creamers at Organic Valley. And I'm a little bit of a skeptic as a dairy girl, but seeing how much love he put into his oats to go to oat creamer, and he's still a dairy farmer, really changed my perspective on things. There are a lot of aging farmers across the nation right now, and sometimes they don't want a dairy anymore, but they love the farm so much they turn to cash cropping as an alternative. And we saw an opportunity there to keep these farms still going, keeping this land family owned, organic, still being a cornerstone to the rural community as farms tend to be. And part of that opportunity was turning to the oat creamers. Are we going to be coming out with a huge oat milk line? I don't think so. That might not be in our vision. It might end up being in our vision. We are, again, very, very proud dairy brand. But we do see some opportunities with these alternative milks, if you will, that we're not completely closed off from opportunity with them.
If that's what the market wants.
There is a joke. I believe it was George once said, or Wayne Peters, one of our founders, Wayne Peters once said, if they want purple milk, I'll give it to them. Now, clearly we're not selling purple milk, but we are a
But
very
good.
consumer focused cooperative brand.
Now, where does Organic Valley Milk sell its milk? Elizabeth?
Well, I think Sabrina could answer this, but we're in stores across the country. We are in Whole Foods, we're in Target and Walmart, we're in your local grocery store. Our salespeople do a really good job of selling it into local grocery stores across the country. So you can really find us a lot of places nowadays. We're in Sprouts, we're everywhere, actually.
To
You're in our
be to be everywhere, you got to get everywhere, which means that you must have a tremendous distribution system to handle all of that.
Oh, absolutely. Definitely. What were you going to say about, were you going to say something about where we're at and everywhere you were starting?
I was going to say, if you're in the Midwest, we're also in Quick Trip. If there's any Midwest listeners, we are in Quick Trip.
Which is a gas station slash convenience store
Good.
for
Very
sure.
strong Midwestern roots.
Yeah.
Sure.
But yeah.
And you're also in Australia.
We have meat farms in Australia, yes.
Okay, so you work with organic farmers. So organic is really the key, isn't it?
Correct.
That's really the tie that binds everything together.
Well, I will say something we haven't really hit on that is also a key component of our cooperative is we're family farms. My family has, I'm third generation. It's me, my dad, and my brothers. We're the main people on our farm. We have other farms out in Iowa, out in Minnesota, out in California. It's a dad and his daughters, a mom and her sons. It's a whole family unit, like multi-generational farms that in dairy we say keep the lights on. We're keeping the lights on these family farms that otherwise might not have some place to ship our milk. We're the kind of cooperative where we pull each other up rather than cut us off at the bottom. You know, when you got a fraying rope, rather than cut off the fray, we'll fix it and we'll glue it tight so that it continue to work. That's just kind of another mentality that we have here. And I think it's very, very important for the way we operate and the way we make our decisions moving forward. Going back to that mention of community before, the co-op itself is a community. It's a community of family farms that are trying to survive in rural America. And you talk about people coming together for clout. Clout isn't just in the marketplace. It's out in the hills and the fields. Clout, you have these big farms with clout. They want to continue to build upon themselves as well. So it's very, very important to us as a cooperative that we protect farmland in rural America that is still owned by families, multi-generational families. You'll have, there's a farmer here. He's down in Cuba City, Wisconsin. If you ask him about the history of his farm, he tells you about when his family came across the ocean, because that's when his family farm started, was when his family immigrated here. And there's so many stories like that within the co-op of people being on this land for years, understanding how important it is to be stewards of the land and understanding how important it is to protect this land from what may come.
Ooh, what may come?
Who knows?
Who knows? I just caught your Wisconsin accent there. It was
oh,
perfect.
No.
Yeah, that was perfect. Well, both of you were raised on dairy farms, right?
Yep.
So I have a big question for you. I'll start with you, Elizabeth. When you were growing up on a dairy farm, did you ever milk a cow by hand?
I did, actually. Yep.
You did? And
yeah.
Sabrina as well?
I mean, I haven't fully emptied out the udder by hand, if you will. But I mean, part of the milking process is called stripping out the cow. And it's when you just take the first bits of milk and you do all that by hand. There is no machine to do that for you.
But to
so.
Do that, to get it going, yeah.
Yep, yep.
Well, I was just wondering if you ever experienced filling up a milk pail with milk and then squirting the cat who was there waiting.
I have gotten a cat before. When I was little, we were in a retrofit parlor. It used to be a stanchion barn, and then we took out the bottom of it and turned it into a milking parlor. So there's a pit so the cats could walk up by the cows and I'd be down in the pit. And if I turned it just right, I could get a little stream for the cats, because I am a big barn cat girl. I got all my cats named and I have them all.
And the significance of a barn cat in the dairy farm is what?
They are the guardians, if you will. They are the, you know, you talk about having a guard dog. My cats know more about what's going on than my dog does. These guys are out in the middle of the night patrolling your fields. You'll be driving down the road 10 o'clock at night and suddenly you'll see one of your barn cats a mile down the road.
On the
They're
hunt.
everywhere. They're on the hunt. You notice when you don't have any cats. They'll
No.
be too much other stuff going on in the shadows. But those cats, my cats run a tight ship, just like my mom.
Good.
They're always working.
So one thing I've noticed is that everything and everybody on a family farm has a purpose, has a job, has a role to play in the survival of that farm. Fair assessment, you think?
Yeah, I will. I will say that. You know, my grandparents haven't worked on the, I mean, my grandma was a school teacher, but my grandpa had the farm before my dad did. And even though he's in his 80s and retired, he still comes out and patrols and brings us donuts on Saturday morning and makes us breakfast burritos when he knows we're going to have a long day and does whatever he can to help the farm just move. Even though he's not a part of it as much as he used to be, he still wishes the success of the farm.
Well, it's been a great hour of news talk radio about the Organic Valley Co-op with both of you, Sabrina Servais and Elizabeth McMullen. I want to thank you both for joining me today and telling the world about the importance of co-ops and the significance of farmers working together. Because without each other, it just doesn't work. You can't make it work very easily. Because we need each other. So thank you both. And I needed you to tell the story, and you did. So thank you both very much for joining me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having us.
You've been listening to the award-winning Food Chain Radio Show with Michael Olson. And if your friends missed the show, tell them to log on the Food Chain page at metrofarm.com for a listen. Now, go out and find some food with its farmer's face on it and live.